그게 생각하나 생각. 아무리 바보 아무리 무나 그걸 쓰는 데 뭐 It's talking about a simple halacha. This is Makor, as we say often in tefillah. In general, it's rare that I would say it's very rare that we learn halacha properly. It's like, you know, usually when we learn halacha, so we have a halacha shiur and we learn Mishnah Berurah, you know, which is really the worst way to learn halacha. Really, to learn halacha, you have to go back to the Makorot. You know, you have to go back to Chumash, and then you have to go back to the Makorot and go through all the Gemara, and the sources in the Gemara, and then afterwards you're able to understand the halacha. You just open up the Shulchan Aruch. You don't know really what the intention is behind the halacha. However, you know, as what happens is in this world, we don't have enough time to do it. As a result, we're afraid, you know, you just have to just tell me what to do, all right? You know, because, you know, we're lucky we can know that, so we just throw out his information and we try to do it, and it's as best as we can do. However, especially over here in Brochas, it becomes, if you don't, you know, the halachas of tefillah are slightly different from all the other types of halachas. Because, we said this a few times, the halachas of tefillah are like symbolic actions that we do, many of them, in order to enable us and clue us in to how to daven. And if you don't know the source for them, often, you know, all the gemaras about how you stand and how you bow and all these types of things, so you don't really grasp what you're doing when you're doing it, and therefore a lot of the benefit of the halacha is gone. So especially here, brachas is also easier because the halachas of tefillah, like a lot of agarana is mixed in, so it isn't so.
Yes.
It isn't so technical. You know, when you're learning nezikin, you really have to dig in. But moed in general is different. Moed in general is completely different thought pattern than nezikin. You know? Moed is more philosophical, hashkufic. In general, it's different ideas. Every seder is completely different. Anyway, so this is sort of an example of that. This is the Gemara that's dealing with. Good morning. This is the Gemara that's dealing with a halacha about having a fixed place for davening. And it says, So anybody who makes a fixed place to daven, Elokei Avraham B'Ezroi, the God of Abraham, B'Ezroi, helps him. Ukushemeis, when he dies, you know, what type of levaya is this person going to get? Ukushemeis. Omrim loy, this is what they say about him when he dies. They say to him, Ey Onov, what an Onov. What a humble person. Yeah. What selfless person. No ego to this person. Why? Ey Chosid, what a Chosid, you know. Yeah. Why this person, he's mitamidov shel Avram Avinu. He's a student of Avram Avinu, this person. Incredible. So you were right. Now, let's dig in over here. There's a lot of things to discuss before we finish. Now, first of all, the Gemara is saying, as I say, that this is a source of this halacha. You're supposed to have a fixed place to daven. Now, the halacha is, this is, we possibly all know, you have a makom kavua, right? People know the halacha, you're davening in shul, and you know, you go into a new place, and so you got to get bumped. I mean, you're in my makom kavua, you know what I mean? And it's my place, you know. So, sometimes you get people who are sort of like more, you know, like easygoing, and they say, well, Dalai Lama, this is okay, you know, and they just stand next to you and make you feel uncomfortable. a lot of times people just go, you know, out, you know, it's my makom. No, you're only the first day, it's not your makom, it's just your makom. And that's halacha, that they have the right to do that because you're supposed to have a makom kavua and shul when you die. And even if you don't daven in shul, let's say you daven in your house, like people do, especially women who daven, you know, don't daven in shul. So in your house also, you're supposed to make a makom kavua, a fixed place where you daven in your house, certain place in the living room, a place, makom kavua. Now, that sounds like a very small thing. However, the Gemara is saying it's not so small at all, because it says somebody who does such a thing and makes a fixed place to daven, so he becomes a Talmid of Avram Avinu. And awesome. Yeah, in life, it's not so posh. Yeah, Avram Avinu is a very good Rebbe. You know what I mean? And, like, you know, they had this story, you know, there's this funny thing in Sichas Ranin Rav Nachman. He says to his students once, he said to them, you know, if I had a Rebbe like you have, you know, why, I would have ran to listen to him. How I would have, you know, what I would have done for him if I had a Rebbe like you have, you know, only I didn't, you know, he gives the Musa, you know. You have no idea what a Rebbe I am for you. If I had a Rebbe like you had, I would have run, you know, miles to come and listen to him. What a schus you have to have me. That's how he used to say. That's how he spoke to them. He did that a lot, that kind of stuff. I had no idea, you know. It's very interesting how he used to speak to people. If I had ever known how great I would be when I was your age, you know, like, imagine how much greater I would be now. But I had no idea when I was younger. I had no idea how I would ever be Rav Nachman. I had no idea I'd be so great. Yeah. I had an idea. Imagine how great I am. I used to say that. It's good. Sounds like good form to her. Huh? It's so true. That's what I used to say. Anyway, so that's good. But imagine having Avram Avinu as a Rebbe. And there's an opinion about this you know, when we talk about it, it's very interesting because we talk about Avram Avinu as an Av. An Av, Avimori, you know. An Av is someone, you are who you are because that's your father. It's your genes. Yeah, not blue jeans, you know. Jeans, you know. You know, it's your genes. You are because you were born that way. And we all have Avram Avinu as a father. And as a result, we have our Jewish DNA, whatever that is, you know. And we all have did you read this gene test that they did about Jewish people? They did. What's that?
The four mothers.
Yeah, where? In South Africa? Where? Who are we talking about?
They tested, I don't know if it's the same one.
Why?
They tested, they found that like 40% of Jews have, go back to the same four women.
Oh yeah, that's the mm-hmm. And they did for Kohanim, they did DNA tests for Kohanim, and they found, you know, with the Zecharim, and they found that, you know, because they could find the male genes, and they found that it goes back to a person who lived in the time of Aaron HaKohen. That's what they found. According to the things, they found it, which is like really incredible by that. I mean, that's what it says on the Chumash. What's the Chiddush? Do you know what I mean? Wow, you know. But, you know, we live in a world where, like, if you don't have a scientific study, you just don't believe it. You know, even the scientific studies are all wrong most of the time. Anyway, but you know, I was amazed by the test. You know, it's really true. Anyway. But they say so that we all have Avram Avinu as a father. That's one thing. And that's who we are. But the Gemara is saying over here that besides having Avram Avinu as a father, so you could have him as a Rebbe also. There's two different relationships that we have with Avinu. But then you can become a Talmid Shel Avram Avinu. Now, if you become a Talmid Shel Avram Avinu, so then, once you become a Talmud from Avinu, you get Avram Avinu Be'ezroi. You get Avram Avinu, and he starts helping you in a unique way. He's Mashpia. Talmidam Shel Avram Avinu. And so when we look at the Avos, it's one thing, you know, you read you look at them, you know, there are forefathers, you know, forefathers. Besides that, there's a different relationship with them that you try to learn from them, and that takes the yegiya. It's not just something that you're born. Like with a Rebbe, you have to make yourself into a Talmud, you know. You have to follow them around. You have to, as they say in English, mun them. You know, you have to learn what they say and ask them questions and make a care. You have to make yourself into a Talmud. You have to come do it. So, you know, that takes a lot of effort. But if you don't make yourself into a Talmud, you're never going to have a Rebbe. You know what I mean? It doesn't come. I remember when I was Ravobu was in I remember when he was teaching here at the Beis HaMusar. He used to have hours to speak to the Kahal every Friday. So every Friday I used to go in, right, and like think up questions to go and ask him. You know what I mean? You know, but I wanted to make a catch with. So every Friday for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, I used to go in, just to come for the question. I used to ask him questions in Hadracha, and simple questions, you know, simple questions of what I should learn, questions on the Ali Shua, all these types of things. That's all I used to do. And it used to take me about 15, 20 minutes. But, you know, one day I went into him, and he said to me, you know, you can't come in and talk to me like this. Like, you don't really have anything important to ask me. You know, these people who are coming in, there are all these people waiting to speak to him, all these, you know, life-shattering problems. You know what I mean? They're waiting to speak to him. I'm coming in, you know. Yeah, what's the pshat on this pshat on Ali Shur? You know, like, what should I do about this chavrusa? You know, tiny things. So he said to me, I don't have the time. This is Kabbalah's Kal, it's precious time. I don't have the time to continue with this. You know, you really can't keep on doing this. So, you know, I got a little flustered, and I said, I'm sorry, okay. I stopped going to him. Yeah, that was one of the great mistakes, you know, in my life. You know, just because a teacher tells you that I don't have the time for you, you stop. What kind of thing is that? What kind of fool is that? You know, you don't stop when somebody says it to you. You go on and you keep on going back. It's hurry. He's just trying to push you away. You don't listen to that teacher. He's just testing you to see if you're really rutinier or not. You go in, I want to be a Talmud if you say, I need Hadracha. Mitakesh. Then I could have made myself mamish into a real Talmud, but you know, I get a little flustered. You know, who am I? And all these people are waiting. That's Kachazeh B'chaim, you know. I remember there's one person I know who told me he was a guy who was learning, a very bright person who was learning, at the time he was learning in Rosh Meach, and he was, you know, a very, very talented person. And he got a little bit close to Moshe Shapiro. And Moshe Shapiro, you know, was a Chashev person, but at the time, Rav Huttner was still alive. Moshe Shapiro knew Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner said, you know, that this guy, he's a really talented person. He could be, you know, a manig in Klai, who knows, he could be Mashpia. Yeah, and they asked Rav Huttner if he could learn with him. Rav Huttner said, okay, you will learn with this guy. And the guy was at Rosh Meach. He'd been learning 3 years, something like that. And he started thinking about it, and he started thinking, you know, I don't really feel like I'm ready yet to learn from Rav Huttner. I don't feel really ready. You know, I've only been 3 years. If I wait a year and I'm more like mature and I know much more, I'll be able to gain much more out of it. So he asked him, could he put it off, you know, for 6-8 months? So he said, okay, you know. So he put it off and Rav Huttner died, and 6 months later, you know. End of, you know, wow. You don't give up a chance to learn with one of the Gedolim Yisrael, you know, on a cheshbon that you'll gain more later, you know. You may not achshav ein asai, you know what I mean?
Wow.
No achshav ein asai, when? So he said afterwards, what a mistake, you know. He could have been a Talmud of Rav Huttner, you know. I gave it up because he was worried about it. I'll get more next year. Kachas, we do things like that. Chaim, you know. But so it is that when we look at the Avos as well, so I'm not just an Av to say, I'm going to be a Talmud, you know. And a Talmud means that you see things that they do, and then you, how do you become a Talmud? I mean, it's hard to ask him shyness, you know, even if we go to Hebron, you know, and ask too many questions there. But, you know, you have to know, like, nevertheless, you see what they do and how they acted, and you decide that I'm going to imitate them, you know. I'm going to choose something that they do, and I'm going to make them. That Ravovi used to say, since I used to tell you I wasn't Zohar to be a talent of his, but yeah, I did listen to him for many years, and he always used to say that in our door, it's extremely difficult to have a teacher. That's the problem in our door. There aren't too many rabbis out there, you know, a lot of them. I mean, it's difficult. So he used to say that even if you can't have a casual teacher, you should make yourself into a Talmud of like a person who lived earlier generations. Make yourself into a Talmud of the Rambam. And you learn all of his svarim. You start going pasuking by him. You read his igaris and you read his things and you start, you know, you take his eitzes and you become a Talmud of the Rambam. So he used to say to do. Or you take another person, you read about them, you go into their life, you take it, you know. I always wonder like that. Again, it's one of the ways I don't have time. You know, we don't have time to do anything in this world. But, you know, read all the svarim of a certain person. You know, like the Rambam. and like mamish for a couple of years, make yourself into a Talmud of the Rambam. You paskin like him, and you know, not naked halacha, but at least the chumra if you want. You know, or you, and you read his igras, and you go through all of his letters that he reads, and you go through all the smor nevuchim, and you go through the you know, the shmona prakim, you go through all of his epistles, and you mamish make yourself into a Talmud of the Rambam. And then you mamish have a rabbi. And as a result, he's mashpia. He's still there. But that's right. But here the Gemara is talking about Avraham Avinu. And the Gemara is saying you can, that this person, you can make yourself a Talmud of Avraham Avinu. Now, it says over here an interesting thing about what does it mean to be a Talmud of Avraham Avinu. The Gemara says that when you make yourself a Talmud of Avinu, Avraham Avinu be'ezraim, he's going to help you out once you make yourself into a Talmud. What's the sign that he's going to help you out? The sign is that when the person dies, so then I'm going to give him the following eulogy, following hesped. A onav, a chosif. Why, this person, what an onav this person is. What a chosif. Why, this person is a talmud of Aravim. That means, this, that he's zocha, this person, this eulogy that the Gemara quotes, this is the hesped that they gave for Shmuel HaKotan. Shmuel HaKotan was one of the great Chachamim, though, as we know in the Torah, that smaller a person is, the greater he is. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was smaller than anybody in this world, right? As a result, he was greater than anybody here, less ego. And Shmuel HaKotan, the Gemara writes, if he lived in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, so he would have been zocha to have the Shekhinah dwell on him like Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara writes, only he lived in a different generation. The door wasn't Roy, not because of him. And he was the one who composed Rimal Shinim, which was, nobody could get right Rimal Shinim, except the person who has no self and no ego altogether, no hatred of any Jew. You can't write a bracha like that unless you have Avos Yisrael, complete Ava. Anybody who has an ounce of hatred can't write a bracha of Rimal Shinim. So, and that was Shmuel HaKotan. He wrote it. He was, a great female. So when he died, this is the eulogy that they gave him. Eichos, Eonav, Eichos. Not only did he get to levels of Anava, of selflessness, which we'll speak about, but he got to levels of Chasidus. Chasidus means he was able to act out of love in this world, which is the highest level we aspire to. That we should be able to act out of love for other people, love for Am Yisrael, love for Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what it's all about. We should be zocha to such things. Mm-hmm. And that was Avraham Avinu's midah. Right? Avraham Avinu was the great chosid, first chosid, one who showed the world the derech of Ava. And they say that once you get Avraham Avinu as a rebbe, so then he helps you out, and you get. You get to be a chassid also, You reach that madrega of chassidus and anova only because Avraham Avinu helps you out. Mashpia to you. Now the question is, which is interesting on this Gemara is, which is what I really get to, is that how does this person make himself a talmid of Avinu? So normally we say you do it by doing chesed. No, something the Gemara says. The Gemara says over here, how do you do it? By making a fixed place to David every day. Every day. The Gemara asks, how do we know? Everybody with me? You understand what I'm saying? You with me? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You with me? Rainy Friday morning, falling off to sleep. It says, Avraham Avinu, asked the Gemara, Avraham Avinu, how do we know? Avraham Avinu was the first one that. You see in the Chumash, he used to make a fixed place to daven each time. Where do you see it, asks the Gemara? Because it says that Vayashke Mavrom says that Aaron, you should put some coffee in there, no? It's for you, right? A little caffeine. It says Aaron Avino. Where do we know that Avraham used to go back to daven in the same place every day?
Where we only had the one shul.
You didn't have a shul at all.
There was no shul.
that's right. Where we know we had a fixed place, it could have gone here, it could have gone there. And they say, I remember that thing, a fixed place. They say, yeah, you see, it's interesting, you see by Yitzchak was always going to different places to daven. Yitzchak, he was, you know, trying to find places of kedusha in this world, and I gotta go down there, you know. But Yitzchak, he went out. Where is he going? Out to the fields. Why is he going out to the field? Because that was a place. Sometimes he used to go to Har Maria there and daven a place of kedusha. I could daven to Hashem there, you know. Sometimes he'd go to Hevron. He was always going to different places to daven, searching out places of kedusha. What says Avraham Avinu? He had one place, and he just went there again and again and again. So much the right of him. Where do we know it from? That was his midah. Where do we know it from? Because it says, after Avraham davened for the people of Sodom, so we had this, you know, incredible tefillah, you know, Avraham Avinu with his heart, trying to save the people of Sodom from destruction, these incredible rishoyim. And, you know, these people who are the exact opposite of everything Avraham Avinu in the world stood for. You know, normally we hate people, who, you know, there's nobody who hates smokers worse than somebody who quit, you know. And you do it. Then once you quit smoking, you can't stand those people, you know. Person works on Lashon Hara, you can't stand people who do it, you know. It's like, that's a clown when you invest time in something. So you don't have any patience for people who, like, don't care about it. That's how most people are. Avraham Avinu invested his life in chesed, helping other people, and the people of Sodom, they were like the cruelest human beings. You know, they had these no solicitors allowed. You know, these things, no solicitors allowed. They have, you're not allowed to have anybody come and ask for money. So they say, and they, that was their whole thing. No, it's not a, get a job, buddy. You know what I mean? It's not my fault. Yeah, you know, we worked for our money. You know, it's like I told you when I was I had this relative once who was like, it's my only really wealthy relative. I can tell you the story, and he's like, you know, really multi-millionaire, and he's in stocks and things like that. And when I was young, idealistic. So, you know what I mean? Like, when I was like 13 years old and 14 years old, I was like a bit of a leftist, you know what I mean, back then. You know, I was very upset about the unequal distribution of wealth. And, you know, like, it really bothered me. Yeah, now, who cares? You know, let the people stop it. No, but back then, I was like, you know, how could it be? You know, what's going on? It's not fair. 20% of the people have 80% of the wealth. And what's the matter with this country? How could it be? You know, it, like, really upset me. I was all worked up about it. And I had this one relative who was this multimillionaire, you know. And, you know, and I started, you know, he got wind of my, he made this simcha, it's, you know, like this, like super, like luxurious simcha, you know, with all these huge, you know, chandeliers and fancy things and food that they spend, you know, I don't know, they had a wedding and they rented out the whole Waldorf Astoria, you know what I mean? 200 rooms, this kind of stuff, you know, something like that, yeah.
Oh,
they're wealthy people.
Word.
So, you know, so I told you, you didn't believe me. Anyway, you know, and there I am. And there I am when I'm, you know, 14-year-old, you know, walking around with a long face and all this ostentatiousness, and there are people starving in the world, and you're spending all this money. So I got wind of it, so he said to me, he looked at me, and he called over, and, you know, I think he got a little upset with me, and he said to me, listen, what's happened? So I said, you know, we started speaking about politics. He says, listen, I want you to know something. He said, I'm wealthy because I had brains and I worked. And the people in this world who are poor, they don't have any brains and they don't work. They're stupid and that's why they're poor. Why should I give them my money? So he said to me, you know, in the midst of our argument. So he said to me that. So,
wow.
Like, you know, that was good food for grist for my mill, as they say, you know.
I can say no, the Arabic kiva and turns rupus.
Yeah, so I said to him, I said to him at the time, I said, you know, I said, let's agree that what you're saying is right. Like, I don't know whether it's right, but let's assume that you're smart, like you're saying, that you have brains. And you were able to go to the stock market and make a few, you know, $100 million, whatever you did there. you know, and these people are too stupid or uneducated to do that. So he said, even if that's true, that means that you should let them starve. I mean, what kind of argument is that? Let's say they're stupid. Where's your rachamim? Where's your feelings for other people? And what do you mean, just because they're stupid, they should listen? What kind of world is that one? You know?
Yeah. So,
you know, back in my 14-year-old.
That's very good.
Thing,
that's good.
But you know.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but 14. You know, yeah, then they switched it. I was more old than maybe 15. But anyway, I'm probably saying it over better now than I did then. You know what I mean? I was like looking back. I can't remember exactly the words that I used, but so I remember it in my heart. So, but, you know, but 30 years later. But, you know, anyway, you know, that was Sodom, right? And Sodom, that was their, that was Mamash the Hashkofa, Mita Sodom, you know, Zenana, it was Zelochasa, you know. Zenana is Lochasa, why should I give it to you? I mean, you're an Nana, I'm not Chasa, I'm not going to give you my things. I mean, just forget it, you know. Why should I let you have something? That's the Gemara. And, you know, so good, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, decided he was going to destroy them all. Because they were, you know, even worse than that. That's already the opposite of what Hashem wants. And then he turns to Aaron Avinu, you know, who really should hate these people, because who worked on Chesed like Aaron Avinu? Aaron Avinu hears, you know, about these people, and Hashem says, I've had enough of them, you know, after they start torturing people who start giving tzedakah, you know. Let's get rid of them already and start the world, you know, take them out of the world. And Aaron Avinu, you know, he goes to daven for them, to save them. Hashem, don't do it. Keep them alive. Don't do it. You know, hard by them. Yeah. And he's not so successful the first time around. Couldn't find enough tzaddikim in that to justify their existence. One tzaddik justifies the existence of the whole city, right? They couldn't find even that. You know. And then he decides he's going to go back the next morning. You know, daven again. He goes back, and it says, "Yaakov, Avram gets up." To the Mokom, Vayomad, Vayamod, Vayashkim Avram Baboker, El Mokom Shur Omad Shom. Avinu goes back to the place that he was standing there. So, what I learned, what's the Pshat? He went back to the place that he was standing. So, what it says, that he went back, you see, to the exact same place. Why did he go back to the same place? To daven again. When he's down wherever, down the place. Because we see him there, that Avinu. He had a fixed place where he always davened. You don't daven there once, Hashem spoke to him, you know. Then you go back again and again and again. That's how he did. Now, this Rav Huna knew how to learn Chumash. And he learned from these two words in Chumash that, you know, I want to make myself into a Talmud of Avraham Avinu. And I see that he had this custom. It can't be coincidental that he davened in one place. He went back again. L'mokom asher amad sham. So he says, you know, I'm going to do that as well. Making myself into a Talmud. Aaron Vino had the same place. And as a result, so the Gemara writes, he was zocher to become a Talmud. And since he was zocher to become a Talmud, so then, at the end of his life already, Aaron Vino's mashpia, and he becomes a chassid, but it all comes out of tefillah. Now, so the Gemara says. Now, the chiddush of this Gemara, the Rabbeinu Yonah, there's a Rabbeinu Yonah on this Gemara. There's a lot to say on this.
What does it mean?
Well, I'll tell you that we're going to run out of time. But the Rabbeinu Yonah asked the question. Rabbeinu asks. Now, in general, we have to know, like, what's the big deal? He asked the question, what's the big deal about making a fixed place to daven? Because of that, you become a chassid, an onav, and a chassid. What's the big deal? I mean, what's the connection over here? So you could say, you grab onto Avraham Avinu a little bit already. There's no real connection, but once you're students, so everything is totally on that. It doesn't really mean. But he wants to know, and it can't be. I mean, so you see from here, he says, first of all, you know, that the idea of making a fixed place, he says, and Rashba writes this as well, simply, it shows that Avraham Avinu, you know, how did Avraham Avinu get to be Avraham Avinu? So he got that way through tefillah. Where did Avraham Avinu get his heart? So it says, Avraham Avinu got his, you know, Jewish heart, so to speak. Where did he get his love for humanity? Where did it come from? So it says he got it through the fact that he worked on tefillah. That's the source of it. There you go. Comes from there. And the sign that he worked, and it was Makshif Tefillah, says Ben Yonah, was that he, the sign that he worked at Tefillah was that he had a fixed place every day. Now the simple pshat he says about a fixed place, the Rashba writes, is that you have to, in order to daven properly, in order to do anything, you know, spiritual value, so, you know, you need a certain environment. You know, if tefillah is going up to Shemayim, you know, you need a certain launching pad. You know, you gotta have a certain environment to do things of Kedusha. There's a lot of work involved in life in carving out a proper environment that will enable you to grow. If you don't carve out that environment, you won't be able to do things of Kedusha. You can't do them. And that takes a lot of work. If you jump ahead and try to do things without spending that amount of time, so then, you know, what'll happen? Well, it talks about this a lot, that, you know, the power of purpose of creating rites. You know, they write in Bereishis, you know, the first time say, you know, what was the idea of Gan Eden? Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu? You know, Adam Rishon wasn't created in Gan Eden, right? So he says, Adam Rishon was created outside of Gan Eden. And Gan Eden wasn't created with the rest of the world. Gan Eden was created before the rest of the world, before everything else grew. It was created earlier. Some say beginning, before the creation. Second day. Whenever, it was created earlier. So they say, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Adam Rishon and put him in there. So he says, what's the idea of this Gan? So they say that the Gan is a place, a garden is a place, they're right, that like all the other things that grew. So they didn't grow in a Misudar way. Hashem said, let there be grasses. And they just grew up wild, you know, like forests. But Gan Eden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything was Misudar. Everything was arranged. And he created a certain environment with the water, with the air, and with the things. That just being in that environment allows the soul to develop. Right? That's what Nandayam is all about. Wow. You know, like you ever know these Japanese gardens? You know, it's a whole art to have a proper garden, especially you create an environment, you know, with the water trickling down, you know, you know what I mean? And everything is Misudar with a certain beauty. And you go into that place, and all of a sudden you flip into a type of meditative state of mind, a kind of quiet, you know, serenity of spirit. All of a sudden your soul now like opens up, you know. And then everybody has a soul. But if you don't have that environment, you're never going to be able to use it properly. So he said he had to create that environment. And a person went there, and all of a sudden you're able to see the beauty of everything. You're able to have... And now all of a sudden the soul of the person is able to be developed. That's a problem. That's creating the, you know, that environment. Reverse rights over there are, of course, that Eretz Yisrael was like the same thing for into the environment. That if when you're there, so Eretz Yisrael was supposed to be a Gan Eden of this world. That when you're there, so all of a sudden your soul is able to grow out and develop. And a lot of environments it can't be, you know. Yeah. And so they write, that's the whole idea about Shalom Bayis also, that you're supposed to create it, but you don't know who your kids are. But in life, it's true, you don't have any idea who they are. You have no idea what their souls are. Like, it's impossible to know. So how do you mechanech them? Like, you don't really know. The answer is that you can't be mechanech them properly. We're not Nevi'im. But you can create an environment that whatever good they have will develop, and you plant them, you know what I mean? And then after, over time, you see this grows up this way, this grows, you know, this is a fruit tree, and this is some wheat, and this is a wheat, I don't know, whatever you have, you know, whatever there is, they grow up. But you just have to create the environment that's fertile, that will enable the potentials to come out. But if you don't create that environment, they'll never come out. You can't be, you know, that's the halacha. You're not allowed to learn Torah in certain environments, you know, like it says in the shuk, you're supposed to learn Torah. Because in that environment, like, once I told you I had a friend who was a, he asked, I had to meet a person who was in New York, so he gave me a call. I didn't know New York so well at the time. He said, you know, meet me on this street corner. And so, you know, I got in the subway, you know, and I, at one stop, you know, all of the white people got off the subway. I get out, you know, in the South Bronx, you know what I'm saying? I tell you the story? I told you the story. So, you know, it's the same idea that you have to create a proper environment in order to be able to learn. You don't do it, so you can't do it. So also, the first step in tefillah is that you have to create a proper environment that will enable you to be able to daven properly. So simply speaking, it means if you have a place in your house where you daven, you choose an environment where you don't go right by the telephone, you know, right? You don't go by the radio. You know, you choose a place that's going to be quiet enough that's going to give you a certain... And it shows what you try to find a place where that place will enable me to daven. That's a simple pshat. That's step number one, that you machshiv tefillah. You go there. It's the same thing, you know, getting to tefillah is a man, you know. You have to have a certain environment. If you, like, it's like, you know, coming to late for tefillah also, like, you don't have enough time to create a proper environment that you can daven properly because all of a sudden you're rushed. You have to have a certain, you know, fixed thing. Not only that, he says here that, but even more than that, they say there's a deeper way to learn about the environment besides the simple pshat that you just have to find a nice quiet place. There's a deeper pshat over here. And the deeper pshat is that psychologically you have to make a fixed place because we function. There's a sort of very important psychological point over here. And that is that we function in this world psychologically because we have certain signals that train us to respond in a certain way. This is an important psychological thing. For instance, if you go every day, what time you eat breakfast? Let's say every day you come down and sit at this table, yeah, at 8:30, and you eat breakfast. So you do it once, okay, you know, you do it twice. Already, once you've done it two or three times, let's say three times, you have chazaka. Yeah, already, once you have chazaka of doing that, you've already trained yourself. And you sit down, and automatically you get hungry, you start salivating, you start thinking of food, the body turns on, and you're ready to eat. Right? That's what happens. Because you've trained yourself, and the body has clues now. It's like, and it knows that when I'm in this place at this time, so I eat. And all of a sudden the body gets ready to eat, and you get hungry, right? It's like that. It's the same thing. You go, you know, you go to a certain place, you know, yeah, it's you train your body to go, you know. You sometimes you go to, and it's like that sleeping. You want to get kids to sleep at night. How do you get kids to sleep at night? It's not so easy to get sleep. It's like this for people as well. You know, they write, how do you, people who are in have difficulty sleeping, so they write, what should you do if you can't go to sleep at night? So the first thing is that you have to make your bed a place that's designated for sleep. People who, like, you sit in bed, and in bed you're eating, you know what I mean, and you're having your radio, stereo, listening to music. So what happens is that the place where you lie down doesn't give you signals to turn off, because you do all the things there, and that's why you can't fall asleep. So you have to only use that place for sleep. Maybe you'll read before you go to sleep. That already sends you a signal that I read before I sleep. So then, as soon as you pick up a book, now it's like, you know, the computer that you know keyboard. You know, you want to shut it off, so you press the button, and now it shuts off. So also, you want to go to sleep, so you pick up a book. You know, you do that every night. As soon as you pick up the book, you're out. That's what happens. Because you've already associated it with sleep. It's like, I'm going to read this before I go to sleep. So once you pick up the book, it's already the signal. You press the button. It's going like that. It's like, what's that?
If you're in learning, is that a good idea?
If you want to sleep.
No, like when you open a book, it's like I want to sleep.
No, only in bed. You want to associate it outside of bed. Although it's true, you make certain associations in life. You can do it as well. Sometimes you do that in the base matches as well. You know, some people, like, have you ever seen that? As soon as they pick up a Gemara, it's already associated. Like, you know, I met one guy. He told me, like, he doesn't get enough sleep. He loves to sleep in the base matches for some reason or other. So he picks up a Gemara, you know, he's out already. Your body just shuts off. That's how people function in this world. That's a psychological truth. And you learn to know that you train, that getting kids together, for sure, it's all training, you know. It's not so much a difference between kids and pigeons, you know. That's how it is. Like, you want to get them to sleep at night. How do you get them to sleep at night? You form these rituals that, you know, you've created an environment, and you start showing them that you go quiet, you stand in a certain place in the bed, you put in the light in a certain way, you read them a certain story. All of these send signals to the person. You do it 3-4 times. So as soon as you pick up these things, you're like, the body's already trained to respond to these stimuli. And then you pick up the book, and all right, kids out, right? One kid person said, you know, I can't get my kids to sleep at night. Well, what's the house like? You know, the kids, they don't have any sleeping. You know, everything's noisy. Things going through. They're going to sleep here. They go to sleep there. You don't have those signals. So the kids are going to stay until they drop, which would be at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you usually drop first. You know what I mean? That's what happens. So that's true. Now, that's true for everything. So the first thing you say, not only is that true, like for eating, and this is very important in terms of training people, it's true for everything. You basically train yourself and send signals that make you respond. So everything is training. Everything is, we're completely, you know, patterned out behaviorally. So the Gemara is saying that you can do the same thing for tefillah. If you have a certain place that you daven, and it's an environment, and you have that place that's kavua. So the first time it's hard to get kavana there, right? You have to work to get kavana. But let's say you go there three times, you're back with Achazoka, and each time you're mechazik yourself, and you work hard, and you have incredible davening there three times in a row, right? The fourth time you go there, you just look at that pole from that angle, and you know, the book that's in the thing, and all of a sudden, you flip immediately into tefillah mode, and you're there. So, it doesn't take work to be mechavan anymore. You've already trained yourself to be in a depth of thought based on tefillah when I see these things and I go into this place at this time. And mainly it becomes easy to be mechavan. You've already trained yourself. The soul just knows that I'm speaking to Hashem now, and all of a sudden you're on. I remember Revolver, the thought, used to say that when a person davens, you know, he was a person who put a lot of a vote in his tefillahs, anybody knew him. So he used to say that when a person davens shacharis, you're in a certain place. You leave the place, he says, when you go back in mincha, so it's like, he used to feel that it's like he's just picking up from where he left off before. And it was like he never left. Just going back to that place. It's not just a physical place. You're going back to that mental state. And you just take three steps forward and you're flipping in, continuing for your left and shacharis. Marif as well. It's like you're just going back to that place. And the truth is, that's the klal, that if you make these fixed places, that's the whole part of Kedusha's basic Knesset, and you make these places designated for tefillah, so when you go to these places, now all of a sudden, you flip on. If you don't go to these places, so then, you know, once or twice, sometimes it's easier to do in a new place, because of the fact that it's New Year. But after a while, you won't be able to do it in a consistent way, because it takes much more work to do it. You're not trained, you know. So therefore, there's a makom kavur. That's a sign that you're machshiv tefillah. It enables you to reach a state of mind that will enable you to daven properly. You just train yourself. That's the second pshat, which is a little bit more psychological. There's a third pshat before I should give over here. They bring down from the Uri. The Uri talks about this in a deeper way. And Yaakov brings down the steps, and he says an interesting thing. First of all, he writes. But in Makom Kavua, he writes, he brings down from this really, he says a really interesting pshat, the Uri they bring down he bases it on a halach in Hilchas Nida. There's an interesting halach in Hilchas Nida, which, you know, is a simple halacha, that a person whose wife is a Nida, so the halach is that you're not allowed to sit together, like on a sofa that's not fixed, you know, like these soft cushions that you know, because if you're driving in a car, whatever, you'll get thrown together, you know, whatever. She's not supposed to sit that way. So the halacha says that you can only sit next to her b'makom kavua. If it's a makom kavua, so then you can sit next to her, because it's a makom kavua. But if it's not a makom kavua, you can't sit next to her. That's a halacha. So he brings down this Ari that darshans, as he does these halachas in a much deeper way, and he rewrites that this is an image. Yeah, in terms of a closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he says, in exile, he says, the klala of exile is that nothing is kavua. You can't do anything in a fixed way. That's the klala, nav and nod. You know what they say, like a rolling stone gathers no moss. Pizra on nefesh. You're here, and you're there, and you're this, and you're that. And you can't do anything. It's like you're forced to live a superficial life, because you can't go in depth into things. To live life in depth is we're cut off from living life deeply. That's all of Gullis. We all know that. You know, all of the modern media and all of the music and all of the changing of the channels. You know what I mean? It was like last time I was in America, this guy was in the car and he was changing channels on the radio. You know, every 2 seconds he was changing channels. Like, why don't you stay in one channel? You know, just well, like that's a people have to move fast. It's impossible to get anything of depth. You can't go beneath the superficial. Everything is superficial. That's all of the problem of modern life. You know, you can't do any. Everything is superficial. You don't have that moment of quiet where something is kavua to go deep. You can't do it. And that's how it is. And you know, cell phones and everything just make it more like that. There's no moment where you can do anything. Well, you know what I mean? Wherever you are, you know, everything's ringing, and somebody's telling you some stupid thing that you don't have anything to know about. You get these messages in the middle of davening. What is it? You know, cellcom telling you the thing. Beep, beep, beep. You know what I mean? What do I need this for? You know, I'm in the middle of Shimon Esrei. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't pick it up. You know, people do it. So that's the klala he writes. So he says, Klal Yisrael in exile, the main klala is that we can't do anything but kvius. We're north and north. You can't concentrate. Who could concentrate on learning? Yeah. Who could spend the time? Who could spend time concentrating on one bracha and one esrei? Baruch. What are you talking about? I teach girls. I know you can't touch. You know, people don't have a span of a concentration that's not more than 10 seconds. After watching television, for sure, you have a 10-second concentration span. And people get bored if you say one thing and one point that lasts for more than 10 seconds. People, you have to switch here, and then this is it, and then the next point. You know what I mean? You're giving a shiur. People can't concentrate. A 40-minute shiur already. Forget it. There's nobody who has an attention span of more than 40 minutes. It's almost impossible.
What do you say?
Yeah, exactly. You have to tell stories, you have to tell jokes, anything. You know, in the middle of the shoe, you just have to say something ridiculous. Because it's true. It's anyway. So he says like this. So just listen. But the Ari writes. He says that's the klola. The Ari's writing a little bit before our time. What did he say about the modern world? He said that the klola of exile is that you can't do anything in the kavis. He says, and this is hinted to in this halach of Hilchos Nida. He says you can't. Yes, sit next to your wife, except in a makom, unless you're on a makom kavua. He writes, if you're not on a makom kavua, so we have no kesher ishtabal. He's learning a sort of, you know, in a drush, not in the sense of a part of the pashut pshat. But you can't do it. So he writes, there's no kavia. So yeah. So he says that they bring it down in this gemara that as a result, if a person wants to be able to make a kesher with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in exile, so the key to do it is to make a certain kvius, right? Who's that? What's going on? Yeah, we're stopping in a minute. So the key to do it is to make a certain kvius, he says. You have to make a makom kavua. And every day you go back to this one place, the same time, again, again, and again. And by doing that, that enables you to obtain depth in this world. If you don't have things, same thing with Torah. Torah means zman kavua. If you don't make things that are kavua, that's a sign that gives you the ability to go deeply into things. And if you don't do that, there's no depth in this world. That's what he writes. And the in a spiritual way as well. So they say that whenever you do, even if it's in your own place, whenever you do a mitzvah in a certain place, again and again and again. So when you do that, so each time you do the mitzvah there, you're creating an atmosphere of kedusha. It's a klal. People come together, even if you go in your own place, one place. We know the Beis HaMikdash, you know, the Shechina is still there because we brought it there because we did mitzvahs there. If you go to one place and you do it again and again, every time you do a mitzvah in a certain place, you create an environment of holiness. And that's all of the avoda in this world, is to create environments of holiness that will enable us to develop spiritually. That's the main avoda of a person. If you don't try to create those environments, then you're finished. You can't do it. That's why yeshiva has to be a place of kedusha. If you ruin the environment, that's the end. Nobody can learn. If people ruin the shul, you speak lashon hara in the shul, that's the end. People can't daven there anymore because you don't have an environment anymore. And that's the most thing. And that environment is necessary to go into depth of things. And Aravino, who was trying to, you know, dig down, you know, this be'er, the symbol of Aravino is be'er. Why is it a be'er? They're digging wells. Because the klala of exile is superficiality. And the avos came, they're digging wells. They're mamish, and underneath is mayim chayim. But you got to dig underneath the surface, you know. And Aravino, with his makom kavu, every time he went, he's drilling a well until he hits oil, you know. Gesher. And then, you know, come the guy, you know, they stuff it up. That's what they do. That's what happens all the time. Comes Yitzchak and drills again, you know. Yaakov, right, that's the whole thing. Mayim chayim rechovos, drilling well. Because that's the cloud of exile. You have to make, that's the environment that enables us to get beneath the surface of life where there's mayim chayim they're pushing. But in order to do that, you need a makom kavua. Believe makom kavua, you can't do it. You're left. Pizur nefesh of Golis. And somebody who realizes that Avraham Avinu, and wants to make himself a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, so he also makes a Malkum Kavua, and he's Machshiv Tefillin, and he's able to daven properly. He says to Rabbeinu Yonah, once a person is able to do that, and he's Machshiv Tefillin Ad Gidei Kach, and he puts everything in his field, he goes, then Mamela he becomes Anav, and Anav, he defends selflessness. Because as he writes, it's Yudua, that any person who davens with Kavana, so he loses his ego, and he becomes selfless in this world. He gains the ability to do things not for himself. That's memela out of tefillah. That's automatic out of tefillah, he writes. A person can't daven without a nava. It's pashut, he says. And he says, and once you reach a nava, selflessness, so the less you care about yourself, now you have the ability to, you start feeling feelings of love in this world towards other people, towards the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Because the reason why our hearts are so small is because our egos are so big. Right? The bigger the ego, the smaller the heart. So it is. You can't care about anybody but yourself. But once a person goes through tefillah, and tefillah gives a person his machmashi tefillah, then by nature he's able to nullify himself. And then he becomes, the ego becomes small. Once the ego becomes small, then all of a sudden he's filled with feelings of love towards other people, towards Am Yisrael, towards the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you know. And then out of that comes Mamela, he writes, that tefillah brings to another, and another brings to Chassidus. And out of that, it goes, and any person who decides to copy Avraham Avinu and make a fixed place, Avraham Avinu himself helps him. And he goes from tefillah, from tefillah goes to another, another chassidus, and when he dies, people will say, what a hesped, a Shmuel HaKon, hey Yonav, hey Chassid, while he started, he made himself into a talmud of Avraham Avinu, and he grows and he develops. So he writes, so that's how the Gemara goes, so it's not such a poshut idea, this Indian of Makom Kavua, you know, it has a deeper, you know, idea too. We don't have time more to think about it. Mr. Sharon, there's different gears over here. Eonav, Echosid, Echosid, Eonav. There's a different shittas about what leads to Eonav, what comes first, Chassidus or Eonav. Anyway, you see them, Mr. Sharon, they switch it both ways. But in any case, you go, we have the time. That's the Yisod anyway, that Tefillah sort of been alight. Tefillah brings to Eonav, no, but before us, Eonav brings to Chassidus. Ava, unless you're able to think about yourself, think about a Kaddish Baruch Hu, automatically you start feeling feelings of love. The heart opens up, you know, and then you grow. But it all comes first to making a fixed place. Okay. Shabbos.